And welcome to Funny Business, a podcast for free thinkers. I'm Robbie Hicks.
And I'm Lockie Bradford. On today's episode, we've got Sophie Lawrence Parker, co-founder of Donata Ice Cream, sugar-free ice cream, I should say. What do you think, Rob?
This was a bloody good episode. Enjoy.
I suppose I'll kick it off with a pretty serious one.
Yeah.
Our mutual love for a certain product. You know, I think you know what we're talking about. Yeah.
Cheddar Shapes, how good.
This is so bad coming from a co-founder of a sugar-free ice cream, low-carb ice cream company. But I'll tell you a bit about why I fit into the story a bit later. But I adore these, and I have for a long, long time. It's very, very passionate. I think you saw my Instagram post about when they tried to take them off the shelves.
Yeah.
And then I had them on sale going, you know.
You're kidding, aren't you? You pay full price for a premium product like this, you know. Just respect the product like that. We're talking
Not
about cheddar
many
shapes.
People put cheddar shapes, put them at the top of the shape kind of like pyramid. But so it's so good to find someone that loves them as much as I do.
I'm out of the loop here. They're not my favourites.
No? No, what's yours?
I like pizza shapes. I love shapes.
Yeah,
okay. I've got boxes of shapes all day, but there's cheddar. It's in the rotation. It's not the number one.
Rotation. So you're eating plenty. That's what you're saying.
I buy them. They are in the weekly shop.
I have recently delved into the, I know I'm surprised this is me, but the Vegemite flavor as well.
Oh, what?
I like the Vegemite flavor.
They're quite good, but never as good as the cheddar shapes. But
they're addictive.
They are
addictive. I can't believe they're back on shelves because when they took them off and they tried to improve the flavour.
Yeah, what's the go there? Why would you try and improve something that people love already?
Oh, well, the rumour was that it was this huge kind of marketing scheme because maybe that they were in decline. And so what do you do when something's in decline? You've got to kind of reinvigorate the space. And by taking them off the shelves, I guess they had an outpouring of love and support. And I mean, there was a lot of hate too, but
it's strange.
Super passionate fans.
I'd never take for granted again. So power to them. They brought them back and they're probably not so much in decline anymore.
How did the journey or the story of Donata start?
So,
it didn't include cheddar shapes.
No, it didn't. So it starts with my business partner, Charlotte. Charlotte and I were good friends. We've been friends since high school. We went to high school together. And Charlotte was, she was a trained pastry chef. She was living in New York and studied to be a pastry chef. When she came back to Australia, she kind of started experimenting with gluten-free and kind of better for you pastry chefing. Obviously sugar was a huge part of her life being a pastry chef. And still when she was, she had a brand that did gluten-free treats. She was still putting sugar in it. And then I think a couple of health things for her pushed her down the path of like educating herself more on sugar and what it was doing to her body. And she learned a lot. And so she started experimenting with sugar-free baking. And through the experimentation process kind of like loved, well, also just going sugar-free herself, felt a lot of benefits, mind, body and soul. And there's a lot of science to kind of back up that. So she kind of dedicated herself to going sugar-free and was looking at different products that weren't on the market, and ice cream was one of them. So she started experimenting in the kitchen, came up with this amazing formula and realized there was something in it. And not only was it sugar-free, it was a low-carb kind of ketogenic formula as well. So that was around the time she took it to another business partner of ours, Jade, and was like, do you want to take this commercial with me? Jade's past was, she was a hockey roo. She played at the London Olympics, she played at Commonwealth Games, super elite athlete, and she'd just retired. So she was kind of looking for her next step. So those two started Donata together. I was around in the early stages. I have a advertising background. So I was working in an advertising agency in Perth as a advertising strategist. And they came to me just looking for some advice on brand and marketing. And I got super, super emotionally invested. At the time at that agency, I was actually working on two different kind of things that contradicted, well, that were contradicting each other, that made me think about this space so much and saw the value in this product and the potential for this product. I was working with a, don't want to name the product, but I was working with a flavored milk brand, and they were trying to basically put a health halo around their product at the time. So it's a very sugar-filled drink, and sales were in decline, and they were trying to find a nutritional angle or a functional benefit, is what the industry calls it, to be able to sell more of this product as people are becoming more health conscious. So whilst we were, you know, faced with that challenge in the advertising agency, at the same time working on a Live Light campaign and trying to tell people that sugar is bad for you and not to drink sugary drinks. So I found that, you know, I was a walking contradiction in my life. And so this was kind of, you know, I saw the problem with sugar firsthand from a consumer point of view and from a health point of view in there. And I was like, guys, this product is amazing. And as I was helping them through it, yeah, just became so emotionally invested that I became financially invested as well. So yeah, that's kind of the story of us three joining. But it was, I think the girls started with a manufacturer in Sydney, and them first got the product to market in February 2018.
It would have been hard seeing the contradiction between one, you going, what do I actually believe in here?
Yeah, I mean, and you're paid to believe in both at the same time, right?
Oh, yeah,
but that's the brief that's come across your desk, and that's kind of what you have to go through. But there's so much with Donata that I wouldn't have been able to understand or do or kind of take hold of without that experience of understanding more about the industry and how food brands kind of use symbols and use different kind of words and things to, you know, put this health halo around things that aren't necessarily healthy for you and how they sell it to consumers. So through those learnings, I've been able to kind of, understand more and apply it to Donata.
So when I go to Coles, what am I getting stooged with?
I mean, it's just everything, and it's stuff that we just said that we don't want to do straight out. It's like, if you're a health product, if you go into the health aisle, everything's green, you know? And it's like, what does that actually mean when everything's green? And, you know, what's truly organic if you're putting the word organic on there, and what is all natural? I mean, these were some of these words that we use, but it's really hard for a consumer to decipher between what is healthy and what is healthy. And, you know, is the word healthy the right word to use? I'm not even sure. Like, I try to steer clear of calling us a healthy product, because health means different to so many, you know, different types of people. But that's really hard when you're trying to sell something that's healthier as well. So yeah, the life is full of contradictions, and it's, you know, it's hard to choose.
It's tricky. Hey, like I'm no expert, but I'm definitely no expert. I go into the supermarket, I go, I want to eat healthier. I want to try. I don't know what to look for. I go buy fruit and veg. I know how to buy fruit and veg, but anything that doesn't come from that, I got no idea.
And individual people are looking for different things. So what I was going to say before about the three of us is, the three of us co-founders is, and the three of us that work in the business, is that, you know, what's great is we all represent a different type of consumer. We were just talking about, you know, Cheddar Shapes before. I'm the type of consumer that's like, I will eat as healthy as possible where I can, but it's like flavor first for me. And I don't dedicate myself to one particular healthy lifestyle. I just try to make easy, healthy choices where I can. So Donata is one of those things where I find that it's equal to ice cream. I love ice cream. I've always loved ice cream. And I may as well eat it without sugar because it tastes just as delicious. But I'll have Cheddar Shapes for a snack, you know, earlier on in the day. Charlotte's more dedicated to a sugar-free for, you know, mind, body, soul type of living, and Jade's on a keto diet, So she's more, you know, focusing on low carb and that type of diet. So we all represent different types of consumers.
That must help when you're brainstorming together and coming up with the plans and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think like if it was just Jade and Charlotte on this journey, I think they wouldn't have the perspective of someone like me, which actually represents a much broader market than just the keto market. So I think, yeah, absolutely. And then when I'm asking, the keto market and the low carb market are a huge part of why we, where our success has come from. They're what we call our lowest hanging fruit customers. They're the people that know that sugar-free is healthy for them. They know that low carb is what they're looking for. And so they know that Donata is the product for them. Whereas, you know, the broader market, like the sugar-free markets, or the sugar-free consumer, or the low sugar consumer like me, is a little bit more broad and less hard to kind of pinpoint where they are. So yeah, I went off on a tangent there, but
no, that's great. So it comes down to like, if you're trying to do your customer persona, you're doing your persona mapping, you guys have already got your customers sorted between the three of you, you sort of know what you're looking at. Because I think I might fit in the same boat as you. I try and make healthier decisions, and I still want my guilty pleasures, like ice cream, icy poles. If I get a healthier alternative, mate, make me feel
how
good.
How many cyclones did you eat last night? Be honest.
I only had one. I'm not like you, mate. Tell the story of how many you've done in a day.
I've done a whole pack in half an hour.
What's a cyclone?
Paddle pop cyclone.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think they're in WA actually.
You're kidding.
No.
The line didn't make it out to WA.
No, we've got paddle pops. We've had paddle pops, but I'm not sure of a cyclone. I might be I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's a shit story. It's just, I polished off 8.5 an hour, whole episode of Home and Away back in the day. But anyway, go Rob, continue.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we like to talk about with our guests is around like team dynamics and how you guys work together.
Yeah.
Obviously having three different interesting perspectives, how do you guys working as a team?
We work really well together because, you know, not only do we represent the different types of consumers, but we all come from a completely different skill set. And, you know, Charlotte is in charge of manufacturing and product development. You know, she's got the mad kitchen skills. She was the pastry chef. She formulated the product. So she works really closely with our manufacturer to develop the product and the flavors. Jade is more on the supply chain and distribution side. I heard her in a podcast the other day said she does the 1%ers, and that's absolutely true. Like Jade, as Shaz and I are probably a bit more creative with, you know, the less attention to detail. And so Jade will be the one that picks up all the mistakes in our work and all the little 1%ers. Brilliant at spreadsheets, and that kind of the business management side. And then I do the kind of brand and marketing side of the business, and deal with, you know, all the design aspects and that type of thing. So I think we all really respect each other's perspective and our own kind of skill sets. So we never really, there's never really any kind of clashes there. We have healthy disagreements and arguments. But yeah,
the trust works
really well. The trust is absolutely there. I mean, you know, who am I to tell Charlotte that, you know, this is not the right formulation? It just wouldn't be right.
That sounds like something Locke would do.
Oh, piss off.
No, Locke's the attention to detail.
Nitpicker, yeah.
He's a nitpicker. I'm
getting the wrong one. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Oh, what about like, I want to talk about, to move on quickly from that. I want to talk about with the diets and stuff. So the keto stuff, all that. In terms of marketing, are you reaching out to dietitians who might be doing cookbooks and all that sort of stuff? Is that an avenue that you go down or not really?
We're not really. So the way we haven't spent a lot on marketing. And I suppose that when you reached out to talk, I was like, what are we going to talk about? Because we're so early in our journey, and we're so early in our journey of marketing. We were very fortunate in our early days. And we are in the early days. So like in our first year, we haven't really spent a lot of marketing So we've let, and part of the strategy has been, is to kind of let the these lowest hanging fruit, which are your low carb, keto enthusiasts, kind of do the work for us. And this, they have their own groups online. They, you know, a lot of people that are keto have their own keto Instagrams, Instagram accounts. It's a crazy socially digital kind of community. And a lot of the work has been done for us by them just talking about our product, because there wasn't another keto friendly product or ice cream on the market. They've discovered us and then they've just spread the word themselves. We've been very fortunate that we haven't had to do much in the way of targeting them. That said, when we do digital or social campaigns, you know, one of our audience segments that we do target is the keto audience, but we actually haven't spent a lot of money on reaching them ourselves.
That's interesting. I love that. That's handy when people are just all aboard. They're doing all the stuff for you. Yeah. That's great.
Keto people are nuts, are they?
They love it. So that generally someone will have their, you know, if they're keto mad, they'll have their own account, and then they'll have, like, you know, their own keto account, which details all their keto recipes or things that they eat throughout the day. And they share information, forums on Reddit, community groups on Facebook. It's super interesting.
I suppose it's a versatile product too. So you can put it in smoothies. You can do a few different things with it.
The ice cream. Yeah. Definitely. And so they shared different, you know, one thing we've seen lately a lot of is people making, you know, affogatos.
Mm.
So I had two weeks on Instagram where people are just constantly posting about making, Donata affogatos, which is delicious.
Best.
Yeah.
Affogatos are the bomb.
It's cool. It must be cool seeing people use your product though and doing interesting things and, like, obviously liking it enough that it becomes a bit of a trend.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the way it's taken off on social, we hear a lot of people talk about how they've seen us heaps on social, and we have, like I said before, we haven't done a lot. We haven't spent a lot on marketing. We've let the growth happen organically, but I think there's a few things that have allowed that to happen. And one of the things was getting the packaging right from the start. So, making that packaging really beautiful, stand out in the freezer, look good in your hand, look good on Instagram, was critical to kind of that organic growth and people wanting to post about it and wanting to put it on the gram or put it on their social.
So, branding's cool, huh?
Yeah. What? Thank you. Yeah, it is.
I love it. Is that all you? Is that from the brands of you?
No, I'm not a designer, but it's from a friend of ours, Joe. So the brief basically was, again, something I learned when I was working in the advertising agency. And I guess I'd harp on about that experience, because when you're working in advertising in WA, you don't get a lot of opportunity to work on FMCG products. It's very much mining mm-hmm. companies, government work, whereas over east is where all the big brands are. So I was very thankful for that experience working on a food or beverage brand. And something I learned was, you know, about shelf appeal and packaging and how important that was. It can't just look pretty in your hand. It has to stand out on shelf. So the brief, I helped put the brief together, and it was basically take away all the clutter. So we looked at the freezer and everything just looks so cluttered and so many messages on the front of pack and so much going on, heaps of fake ingredients that, you know, the ingredients don't look like on there. And so basically it was like, just remove all the clutter, put our proposition front and center. So that's, you know, sugar-free. And we were like, take inspiration from outside the category. You always want to look at doing something different, looking outside of what actually is happening in that lane. And so we're like, I think at the time Drunk Elephant is a beauty brand that was really taking off due to its packaging. And I was like, let's look at beauty brands and let's look at what they do. And so let's bring inspiration from another category in. And yes, that's how we ended up with the brief. And then Joe came up with the amazing design. Joe Kutry Studio. He's a Melbourne boy.
That's cool.
Insane. Yeah. You can go down the rabbit hole with all that sort of stuff. I'm sure the research into, you know, looking in the different sort of industries and picking up the inspiration.
Mm.
Sure, you can definitely go down the rabbit hole. How many different ideas did you have, or was it always the one direction?
I think it was pretty. There wasn't a lot. I mean, Joe's kind of aesthetic is really minimalist and simple. So I think there are only a few things, but this was kind of the one that stood out. And that you'll see on, we're pretty proud of that. You look in the freezer and your eye just goes straight to it. It has massive kind of cut through in the freezer, which is, yeah, really, really important when freezer space is so limited. So they're looking for brands that will stand out on shelf. When I say they, retailers and stockists. So, yeah.
That's one thing I wouldn't mind touching on is how do you, if product is, like you say you got a product and you want to get it in stock somewhere in like the major retailers, I guess, like talk us through the process. Like is it a headache?
Now we've also been really lucky, and I think say lucky, but you make your own luck. We always say that. I think the packaging has helped us overcome a lot or get to a place quicker than we thought possible. We were first in, you know, the difference between the independents and the majors. So the independents, like your your IGAs and your Harris Farms, and they're all the independently owned versus like your big kind of chains like Woolworths and Coles and Aldi. So there's a completely different process. So getting into your IGAs and your smaller independent grocers and health food stores, we work with a distributor. So they sell the product into those stores on our behalf. Whereas a Coles is a process of submitting for a range review and hoping you get in. and obviously that there's a lot more on the line with something like that, because the account is worth way more to us than the independents. So the independents kind of maintain the business. You can't rely on Coles for, you know, if Coles was taken away from us tomorrow, then all we've got is the independents. So we've got to make sure that we maintain focus on both. But back to your question on how we actually got there. When we got into Coles, we amazingly were contacted by them. Normally it's brands like us reaching out to Coles, but they reached out to us. The category manager at the time had heard about our product through our designer's friend who worked in the accounting department. He knocked on the door and said, "You've got to try this product." He'd already had the product in his freezer because his girlfriend had it, and he brought us in for an interview, and we pitched to him. We didn't know what we were doing. We were like, do we pitch? And all I knew was pitching, because that's what I'd done in advertising before. So I threw together a pitch presentation, and we went in, and 3 months later we were stocked on shelves in Coles. So it was a pretty huge moment for us, and a moment of luck, but
big also, milestone.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Crazy.
We were only 12 months on shelf at that point. So that was really huge. We'd never expected something like that to come so soon. We'd hoped for fast growth, but and it's selling really well in Coles. So he took a risk by taking a small brand like ours. I mean, he wasn't even sure that we were able to supply Coles, but luckily at the time we'd kind of predicted that sales would go up anyway, and we wanted to change our manufacturer, because if we'd stayed with our manufacturer previously, we just wouldn't have been able to make the production numbers or scale up to Coles level. So we were already in that process, and
that's lucky, because we've talked to a couple of people around, like if you get a big ticket item like going into Coles or a mate, like you have to scale up your production. Is that that risk in itself is a big thing that people have to hump, or a challenge that people may have to encounter.
Yeah, So we were, again, very fortunate that at the time we were ready to scale up because we'd already had that process to change over manufacturers at the time. So
how good.
Yeah, brilliant. And the relationship with Coles has been really great. It's all about, in the major retailers, sell through, and we're achieving great sell through. I think, you know, it was at a time where the ice cream category was really growing from better for you ice creams coming into the market. So I think the ice cream market had been pretty steady, even in decline, and that comes down to people are just making healthier choices and people are just more conscious about what they're putting in their mouths and how that affects their bodies. And Halo Top, have you heard of Halo Top?
One of our
competitors. They'd come up with this low calorie ice cream that kind of took over the world, and the better for you category was kind of exploding on the back of brands like Halo Top, new vegan options and dairy free options. Coles was kind of looking for more better for you ice creams, and there we were
waiting for them
to come and pick us up. Yeah.
How good's that? I like that. I think it's interesting that they just take one, especially taking on the luck of being ready to ramp up production like that.
Yeah. We were small time, but the growth through the independents had happened pretty quickly as well. Again, I think right product, right timing. It was all, you know, we grew to from 18 stockers in February 2018 to that time the next year, we had about 500 independent stockers, which is still quite big growth in the year in an independent market. So, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Sure, a few learnings from that.
Yeah. I mean, we run a pretty lean business, and it's pretty, like, it's still just the three of us. And we work with, you know, amazing partners to manufacture and all that. So and I guess when you say learnings, it's like, I feel like you've got to have kind of failures and problems to have learnings, but the failures and the disappointments or the mistakes will come, I'm sure, but we pinch ourselves because we just really haven't made that many. We haven't had any major moments where we've gone with our gut and intuition, and that seemed to be the right way so far. So we've learnt by doing the right things rather than the wrong things, which has been great, but fingers crossed it stays that way.
You can still learn through winning.
100%. Yes, absolutely.
It's way better.
But I think it's less poignant.
It's a bad thing.
It's less poignant, you know, learnings, I guess, when you're not failing to learn.
No, that's all right. You're backing yourself. Yeah, I put that down. I wrote that down. Yeah. And I ticked it off, but I'm afraid I learned.
But you do know what? I think without that, you kind of because we don't know what we're doing. We're just going with it, you know. So, we're just kind of like on this roller coaster of just going with what we feel is right, and so we never know if it is right. I mean. Yeah. Our successes and our growth would say that we are doing the right thing, but you just never know. And I think I said to you guys early on too, or when we were chatting earlier about, we do feel a little bit removed over here in WA. So we're three WA girls doing it, and we feel a little bit removed from the business community. We don't have any business mentors. We're really like, you know, forging our own path and just finding our own way without any help. So, yeah, we never know if we're doing the exact right thing our successes say that we are, but
pioneers, WA pioneers, I'm telling you. It's good though. You ride the momentum. And you can only do what you're doing. If you keep ticking the boxes and it's going well, you're not going to change things, are you? You're going to keep going, you're going to keep pushing on. So
exactly.
I love that.
And we're all, the three of us balance out really well, and we're able to make those decisions
by ourselves
because we've got the three right heads in place. So, yeah.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It is a lot of fun. We don't have many terrible days. And you're dealing with ice cream. So like how bad can it be? Yeah. Yeah. It is really fun. We're having a great time.
Creating stuff with your friends and putting it out there in the world and just learning and just living that life experience is just it's a special thing.
Yeah, it is. We pinch ourselves every day that this is our job. We're like, we've got a business, we've got a business and we sell ice cream. Like, and not only that, we get the benefit of feeling good that we're doing something right, for the world by putting a sugar-free product in the market that actually tastes good. So yeah, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves and having a good time doing it, for sure.
No, you should.
I think that's great. That's a sick message, because especially when you're talking about before, is that when you're working in advertising and you have to go against things that might have been conflicting to your own internal values, and now you're going, hey,
100%
living what I want to do, working with friends, and we're doing some fun stuff and we're winning. How good?
Yeah, 100%.
So what about inspiration for you and who you learn from? Like, I know you've got that creative, that branding background, the advertising background. What sort of inspiration, what's your creative process in terms of the branding?
From the branding, I guess I've always been someone that's I'm a very curious person. I think like a lot of strategists or planners in the advertising world would say very similar things. And so I just take an interest in everything and anything. I'm not a huge reader. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I'm always, up at late sending the girls articles about different things. I'll just go on like Google rabbit holes. And so, it could be anything. I'm just always thirsty for more info. And that's not necessarily educational info. Like, I'm deep in pop culture, So, I take inspiration from all those things that I'm consuming every day, all the content that I consume in the day. The process is very just following gut and intuition, but I think all those different things that I consume come into that. And I just get a gut feeling about trends and certain things. I had a quote the other day. It's like, pay attention to what you pay attention to. And I think that's great, because it's like, whatever you feel like naturally kind of like you're consuming, or that you feel like is you, will become a part of that process. So yeah.
I love that. It's important. I think it's important too that you mentioned pop culture and all the other stuff, because I think you can go too deep down the other rabbit hole where you're just consuming content that you like. Whereas when you consume other types of content, you get different ideas and you're not sort of stuck on the same sort of hamster wheel.
Totally. And I take it like, I love like different people's stories and, looking outside like my friendship circle, or looking outside of like what's going on around us. And so they're the things I tend to kind of dive deep into, which is why, I probably am a marketer, because I'm interested in why keto people are keto, or why low sugar people are low sugar, or, why I am like I am, who kind of flicks between healthy eating and not healthy eating, if that's okay too. So, just kind of comes naturally, just that interest for me.
What is your thoughts around content? Like, you, someone who looks at things all the time, like you have to be, I feel like if you're curious and you want to know more, like there's got to be an on and off switch at some point. Otherwise you take too much in and your brain feels like it's going to explode. Is that just me, or have you got any of that?
I don't know. I think, I don't, Kevin the other night was like, oh, he doesn't want a TV down here, down at our holiday home. And I was like, what am I going to do at night? Just think.
You don't read.
I don't read enough. I don't think of it. I'd be just consuming content. It'd be like, I'd be on my laptop or on my phone, or, reading whatever article that I found on whatever website. So I don't find content overload, because it's just kind of my hobby. I don't really find that.
Was
that
you? Do you look?
Content? Oh, yeah. I'm like you, Soph. I just I consume everything and I'm curious. I'm reading all different types of articles and I mean LinkedIn, all that type of stuff. I'm reading every article.
I'm finding LinkedIn quite interesting lately. I'm finding myself spending more time on there. I don't know if they've changed kind of what they do, but you know, I'm finding that the algorithm of just going through the feed kind of really helpful. And I think that's just because, you know, business is the interest and but.
Yeah, well, it picks up on what you're looking at. Yeah, what are your thoughts on it? Yeah.
On LinkedIn.
Yeah, I mean, I need to get more active. And I think the three of us are terrible at self-promotion. We need to put ourselves out there more. I think Shah's just signed up to LinkedIn the other day. But, you know, and there's so much we've missed that's been articles about us and stuff that we haven't been able to tell our, you know, our peers in the business world because we haven't been able to put them on LinkedIn. But I think it's a great tool. I mean, I love it. You guys connected with us over LinkedIn, you know, that's one thing, you know. So yeah, I think it's a great tool. You guys are kind of experts. Who's the expert in
LinkedIn?
Self-proclaimed expert.
I like that. I gave myself the gold star.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
but like I was saying, like it's like anything, like if you've got a brand or even a personal brand or whatever, you don't have to be on every platform, but it's important to know what they do. So in terms of business and networking and, you know, just meeting people, LinkedIn's amazing because people are a lot more receptive because they treat it. It's their CV. It's their baby, like you were saying, Rob, you know, so they're way more receptive. And there's a lot of interesting content being shared on there at the moment. Through storytelling and articles, and I don't know, it's good to keep up to the trends, like especially in technology and business. It's like a Facebook, you know, when you get your news from the news feed. Like, you know, I don't watch the news anymore, but if I looked on Facebook, I'd sort of know what's happening. And that's what I'm finding LinkedIn sort of helpful with work wise you know.
Same. No, it's becoming more helpful every day. I think, I don't know if that's people becoming more engaged with it and posting more articles that are of interest, but yeah, it's been great lately.
Yeah, I still find it's a funny, it's an odd platform. It's weird to spend time there all day because everyone's still like so serious and like
A bit stiff.
And you don't know. There's no like rules. Like you can't say like, oh, you can or can't do this. It's some people take offense to weird things because it is a professional platform compared to say like Instagram. You really have to think the different type of content that's fit for purpose.
Yeah,
but I guess some of the stuff that care less, do more.
Yeah, like treat it like MySpace a little bit. You know what I mean? Like you're a human. Right. People connect with humans. Like it's not. If I find it hard when brands are talking about something and you're like, well, I don't trust you. It could be a fact. It could be right. But I just who are you kind of thing. You know. But I feel like as you know, if you're being authentic and sort of writing how you speak and putting out content that's true to you.
Yeah.
It makes it easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the same for any. Social platform, but any digital platform is being true to yourself and putting who you are out there. I mean, we take that philosophy definitely with our own Instagram. Our Instagram, we're still very thin on content. That's something that we're working on in the background. But what we do put out there is very authentic and true to us. And the other thing is just trying to do something that's different to every other, or trying to not look like every other FMCG brand out there or healthy product brand out there. You know, if I told you some of our competitors or a couple of other FMCG brands in the healthy space, you'd look at all their Instagrams or all their content and they all look the same. And so until we find our own kind of voice and path, I've been a bit holding back on actually putting stuff out there because I just don't want to be putting the same thing as everyone else is doing out there.
Makes sense. How do you test it though? Like if you had an idea and you're like, oh, this could be good, but I don't know how I'm going to get a response. Do you have like a feedback loop of friends or anything?
No, not really. I guess you asked, we're doing something upcoming, a campaign, which, you know, is something that's a little bit more interactive for us. And you know, that's something that, again, that's the first time we've kind of put ourselves out there for our fans to interact with us in this way. And so I've asked a few other people like what they think of it. And I haven't seen this type of thing being done in the FMCG space. So I'm excited to put that out there. But no, that's only asking a couple of friends if they think it's cool and would they do it, you know? So, but again, just going with that gut feel and intuition. And if I'm doing something that's different from other FMCG brands and giving something a go, I'm proud to put it out there. If I'm just copying what the last brand did before me, that's when I feel a bit hesitant to put it out into the world, because I feel like, what's the point?
It's exciting too. You want to see the response. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's a very small little campaign, kind of riding this wave of eating ice cream in winter and during kind of COVID corona times. And it's a little Q&A. You'll see it pop up in the next couple of weeks, and we're getting a few influencers involved. But it's our first kind of like more participation-based kind of campaign, which should be fun.
That'd be fun. Well, keep an eye out.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I can't
wait to see how that goes. It's called Doing Nothing with Donata.
Oh, I love that.
Fairly simple. Yeah.
That's such a cool name.
Well, our brand name actually means, do you know it's Spanish for it's nothing. So
Nada means nothing, yeah?
Nada means nothing. So the original name for our ice cream company was Nada, that Charlotte named it, but we had trademark issues with that. Which I think was a real blessing, because I think Donata is just that little bit more tonally right for the brand. So our tagline is "You're welcome," so you're welcome to eat it, or "Thank you for this delicious sugar-free ice cream." You're welcome, that type of thing. So I think it works.
That's cool.
Better than what Nada would have. Totally.
There's a bit of swag to that too.
There is, yeah, and we like that. We like a little bit of swag. I think that's good for the health. Or better for you space, that for brands to have a little bit of swag.
don't bore us to death with your health. Exactly. I get it. You're healthy. Yeah. We get it.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, everything's looking green. Everything's like, why can't like a brand look fun and colorful in the better for you space? It definitely, I think, entices people that aren't, or that are less inclined to look for those health things, who'll pick it up anyway to pick up the product. So yeah. Or to pay attention to the product or engage with the product.
Do you guys have plans for, like, I looked at, I've gone on the website and checked the thing, right? You guys are in Dubai as well?
Yeah, that's our first export market. So that happened at the start of this year.
That's cool. How did that come about?
That came about through a guy that knows a guy. And we work with a consolidation company in Melbourne. So they basically consolidate a lot of different products and ship them to Dubai to this particular store called Spinney. So we're in 31 Spinney's and Waitrose stores in the Dubai UAE region. And anyway, we got introduced to him and he was like, okay, you have to meet the Spinney's guys. I really love this product, and I know that they're looking for different kind of, I know that Halo Top's just gone in over there and it's selling really well, so they're looking for other better for you brands. And we met with the guys and had a great conversation. They loved the ice cream, our values really aligned, and they did an order the next week. So it's been really great. Our first export market has happened really smoothly. It'd be great if all markets could be that smooth, but it's a little harder getting into other places. But it's been a wonderful experience. We sold like zero brand awareness. Again, back to the packaging and how important it is that we got that right at the start. We sold out in 3 weeks in Dubai with zero brand awareness, and that's purely just looking different and looking sexy on shelf, you know.
That's sick.
Yeah. So people just, their eyes are drawn to it. They'll pick it up, and it's something that they're looking for at the moment, which is, you know, lower sugar products. So all those things come together, and we're selling out in a new market with zero brand awareness. So it's pretty amazing.
Is there plans on the roadmap to go other international markets?
Absolutely. I think we're looking at a few different things at the moment. I think COVID's not helped that. Just being able to communicate with different people in different markets and have those conversations. I think people are putting off having those chats, and it's making a little things a little bit more difficult. And we probably didn't have the growth that we'd expected this year from that perspective, because we'd hoped to maybe enter another market, but yeah, it will happen. Yeah, we'd love to get it to New Zealand at least in the next year, I think. That makes a lot of sense.
100%. I think it's such crazy times at the moment. It's just put everything in a slow cycle.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it really has. But we've picked up a few business wins this year. Everything kind of slowed down at the start in March for us, and we were like, okay, we just need to pull back expectations of growth and things we're going to achieve. But towards the end of the financial year, last financial year, things started to kick off again, and we've got some exciting things coming up that, you know, will allow us to achieve a bit more growth in the next year, which is really exciting. So yeah, not all bad. Also, ice cream sales are up.
Yeah, everyone's at home.
Everyone's at home
eating ice cream.
So I think in general, I was reading last night that the category is up, but we've also seen ice cream, like our own ice cream sales go up. So when Melbourne went into lockdown, you know, it was hard at the start of COVID to kind of isolate it. But when we saw Melbourne go into lockdown, we saw Donata sales go up. So, you know, people are just at home wanting to treat themselves better, which is good. I don't know if that's good, but it's one of those things that happens we can't complain about, right?
Oh, you're helping people through some difficult times. This should feel good.
Hey, it's sugar free. It's good for you.
Yes. Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's right. You're welcome, Melbourne. No, you know, you just don't want to be profiting off, you know, bad times as well. But as long as, you know, it's all positive.
It's hard, isn't it? I suppose if things are going well in such a difficult time for a lot of people, in terms of the marketing and stuff like that, does it enter your head on how the language that you're going to use in terms of that, or it doesn't really affect you?
Not really for us. I mean, we wouldn't say a message like, we can comfort you in the lockdown. You know, we wouldn't be so specific. Because people are doing it anyway. So yeah, I don't want to be seen to be profiting off the lockdown. but yeah, though nothing really kind of changes from us from a marketing perspective, because we wouldn't really,
I've seen heaps of those ads around.
They go.
I don't think the worst ones are that I've seen that I honestly, they're pretty confronting when you see them, is that the life insurance.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
I'm watching TV. And then there's like a video of some poor dude dying of COVID, and then it cuts to, have you organized and set your life up for you? I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I've just got my box of shapes. I just want to go and chill out and be happy. And I'm already anxious as it is.
Yeah. I can just see the heads around the advertising, you know, table going, guys, this is great for us. We can, you know, we can really make something out of this. It's just awful.
It's too much.
Having that advertising background, I suppose, when you're looking at commercials, you know how the sausage is made, you know what I mean?
Totally.
So you'd be seeing different things in a lot of other people.
Yeah. I also feel sorry for them, because I know that that's not necessarily the brief that's, you know, that's the brief that's like landed on their desk, and it might not be something they feel good about doing, but you know, that's who's paying the bills. So
that's it. It put in my mind though. Seriously, I was like, oh man, my life's a bit weird at the moment, you know?
Yeah. are you guys in lockdown?
Yeah, we're stage three. So we're not stage four. We can go out, we can exercise and stuff. We can't go over each other's houses. Masks are mandatory. It feels a bit like Handmaid's Tale at the moment. It's very but the tension was high early. But now I think it's eased a little bit. I think people are just a bit more aware, or, you know, they've been through it a little bit. But yeah, it's interesting times.
We were recording in person, because Lock and I live around the corner. So
Oh yeah.
And it's a bit weird that we're We saw each other for a coffee.
Be in the same room.
Yeah, we started recording at the start when the lockdowns were worse. We started recording separately, and then they eased and we went to record in person. Now it's like, do we feel a bit guilty if we're sitting there doing? We see each other in the morning, in the afternoons, and we just don't sit next to each other when we record. I don't know.
Well, for us, it's been normally Charlotte lives in Sydney. Jade is in Perth. I kind of live between Perth and LA. So COVID has kind of meant that we're all in the same city all together on the same time zone. So it's been really great for us being able to work together and, you know, get into a groove.
We're just explaining product placement for Lock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sugar-free Coke. I'm weaning off it.
No sugar.
The girls. See, I love my Coke Zero, and I was like, see, girls, sugar-free, living the life. And they're like, no, that's terrible for you. So please. Charlotte was like, no, I can't handle those artificial sweeteners.
Yeah, what is it? What's in it that's bad for you?
Listen, I don't know. I don't want to look it up because...
I'm scared too.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure all signs point to some kind of cancer though. You know?
it's not great, is it?
Anything artificial, yeah.
Once you know, you can't unknow either.
I suppose digital marketing, you mentioned that you don't do too much of that at the moment. Are there plans?
We do it. We just haven't spent a lot of money doing it. The way we do it is very focused seasonally with social campaigns. So I don't have an always on social budget at the moment, but we'll move towards that.
Yeah.
So I focus on key campaign moments, which would be summer and pre kind of like now going into a moment, kind of springtime around new flavor launches. And that's just because as a startup with a lot of money that we need to spend on production and product development, you know, marketing budgets are thin. So we also do always on, you know, search marketing, which we found is really, really good for us.
Like Google Ads or Google Ads. Pay-per-click, what is it called?
Yeah, Google AdWords, which I think should be a staple, you know, for any business. And a lot of like my budget is going into more long-term development of the brand. So when we first developed the packaging, I wasn't, you know, there's a lot of things that I would have told myself that you shouldn't do it this way, but it just has happened this way. And if I did have it my way, we probably still wouldn't have a product on shelves because I'm so particular about the way I want things for the brand. And it's kind of this slow moving beast rather than something that's quick. So, and we just needed to get the time was right. We needed to get a product on shelves. And if I had to do all the brand stuff and develop all the brand tone of voice and messaging and all the brand assets and bits and pieces, we'd probably still be in, you know, that development stage and not have a product on shelves, like I said. So yeah, so we put the product out there with the brand was just what you saw on the packaging, but we hadn't developed really the actual brand. That was just packaging. So we've had to go back and do all that stuff. So we've been, you know, spending or investing in kind of long-term brand development, brand communications development, which we haven't been able to put out in the world yet because of COVID, and new website and key messaging. If you look at our messaging at the moment, it's very thin. It's very, you know, just focused on ice cream and the proposition, which is great because it needs focus. But in that messaging that we put out through social and daily types of content, you know, we need more depth. We need to explain why we're here. We need to explain why we have no sugar. And I think it's been great because it's been really digestible and accessible. But there will be a time. And that time is coming soon where we have to start talking a little bit more in depth about who we are and what we do. So that's kind of been the stuff that we're working on in the background and investing in the background to get all that stuff right.
I love that. Even, yeah, you go, Rob.
Like you said, that's an exciting piece of work you're doing because it gives people connection and gives the consumer an understanding of your purpose as a brand.
Totally. And we know all that. It's just how do we actually put it out there in the world and what's the right way to go about it. And I'm really particular about the way in which we will do that. So I haven't wanted to just put it out there willy-nilly without the right channel to do it or the right caging to do it. So
when it feels right.
And we haven't needed it. We're, you know, we won't be the brand that is telling you all the reasons why you need to eat sugar-free. It's why we are sugar-free. I don't think it's the job of a food brand to tell people or to educate people necessarily. But we do need to tell people a bit more about why we do what we do.
I suppose the order that it happened too, you could sort of gauge the feedback pretty quickly from the packaging. So you can go and the cultural feel and what the whole brand is about. Yeah. So you can sort of look and go, oh, well, it's not really a blank canvas. I've got a bit of putty here and I can sort of, it's explaining the story to me a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it comes through anyway, like our, what we believe in and what we do, but we'd like to bring that to the fore a little bit more. To explain, you know, part of what we do is 70% of packaged foods on shelf have added sugar to them. And so, you know, the ideal world for us that we've imagined is that we're able to be a part of a movement that, you know, flips that on its head. And so we always talk about sugar-free becoming the new normal. And that's what we're really about. So we won't be able to do that alone as our own, you know, as a brand. We will probably stay in the focus or focused on the dessert category or the, you know, sugar-free kind of treats and, you know, typical kind of junk food, sugar-filled things. But we'd like to show people that you can eat sugar-free but not compromise on taste or texture or all the things that make it delicious. So,
That messaging part, like I saw what you posted on Instagram today, sugar can be the willpower you need to under-eat. Like that was a real...
Yeah.
That was a real thing.
Yeah, real thing back in the 70s. Isn't that wild?
It's insane.
And one of the things there was this ad in the 90s, I saw it on Grow and Transfer once. It was, but that again, that was from a sugar, you know, sugar company or sugar association, but they were trying to sell sugar in the 90s by being this, you know, natural energy because sugar comes from natural sources, from sugar cane. So it's natural and it gives you energy. And, you know, that's what was sold to us and our parents for so long. And everything was focused on fat that, people weren't looking at the sugar content of their foods. So that's all changed now. Obviously people understand that sugar isn't a great product for you in, you know, large quantities, and everyone should be limiting their sugar. And diabetes is the fastest growing kind of chronic disease in Australia. And that's the same in most countries around the world. And so everyone should be reducing their sugar intake. So, you know, we want to be part of that to kind of undo all that bad education and make sure that people can still eat delicious while they reduce their intake. So
I think that's important. I'm not sacrificing. If it tastes like shit, I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah, same. And that's most people, you know. So, and it doesn't have to be. The thing about it is it's expensive. It really is expensive to make a delicious, you know, sugar-free anything and make it well, you know, without the artificial sweeteners and different bits and pieces to pack it out. So that's another thing that we get, is obviously one of the barriers to for people to try our food is, or to try our ice cream, is it's $11.50 in Coles. So that's, you know, it's a premium ice cream. It's the same price as Ben and Jerry's, and you know, people just can't hack paying or complain about paying for that, paying that price for that. But you know, once we kind of have that conversation and explain that it's just that we're not greedy, it's just that expensive to make. Our sweetener is 9 times the price of sugar. This is what it is, because the demand isn't there and people aren't eating like this on the reg. So the more people that are engaged with sugar-free eating and or eating less sugar and are engaged with kind of new ways of eating sweet foods or different sweeteners, then we should see that cost come down, and hopefully the price of our product will, you know, balance out. So
do you think that's a consumer, like, do you think that's like consumer awareness too? I think it's interesting. Yeah. We spoke to a dude a couple of days ago who has a clothing brand out of WA too, isn't he?
Mm.
Is he?
Who?
No, he's out of Sydney, isn't he?
Yeah, he's out of Sydney, mate.
Not WA.
Stop making
shit up. Right. But we were talking about sustainability, even producing, like manufacturing or trying to be more sustainable as a brand, but understanding that that comes with associated costs. And then it's actually it's cheaper to do the wrong thing and it's more expensive to try and do the right thing.
Yeah.
But consumers are trained to want the cheapest, fastest option, and that's what's been pushed down our throats. And now it's a different way of thinking, but it's also consumer awareness that they go, well, if I'm going to go to the shops and I see something that is priced differently, what will be curious, ask why, think ask more, why. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, it's really hard. Like, consumers aren't trained to think that way. They're like, you know, cheaper is better, and you know, a lot of things do come down to cost for a lot of customers. Where, you know, I think part of the reason we are also kind of shocked at our success is because people are willing to pay that much for a sugar-free product. Well, we're shocked ourselves that people are willing to pay that. We know the product's good. We know it's unaffordable for a lot of people, but people are actually willing to pay that price. But you know, like I said, we get a lot of people on social that will say, you know, if it was $7, I'd buy it. I'm like, mate, if it was $7, we wouldn't have a business. We actually couldn't afford to run this business with the product for $7. But I have those conversations. I would like. For every complaint or every comment we get about price, I will have an individual conversation with that individual about what that is. And everyone, like, they're so open to hearing it. It's just weird, I guess, that it's coming from a brand. It's, you know, it's weird that having that conversation with a brand, but people really, really love it and warm to, you know, and then I'll say, look out for us on special or, you know, when it is more affordable. But then most people, I think, once they have that understanding and that context, they are willing to buy into it a little bit more.
And I suppose, yeah, when you're directly messaging them back, they're probably going, oh, shit. Like, even if I said something bad, they're like, oh, shit, they've replied. They've definitely heard what I said.
I mean, like, most people want to reply, don't they? I mean, unless they're trolls and then you won't hear back, but... One of the most brilliant things about, you know, having a startup or a business and food brand in a world where you have that two-way conversation with customers is getting that reward of having that conversation and being honest and telling them, like, you know, I'll send them a paragraph to explain why we're priced the way we are. And like the conversation back and forth is always warm and rewarding for me. And talking about learnings, like, I learned so much through those conversations. So yeah, it's great.
I think it's part of the movement, isn't it? You're talking about the industry needs to change. If you're directly talking to people, they're definitely listening because you're responding directly to them. So I think that's a part of what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think that's an important, while we're still thin on marketing budget, a lot of my time goes into it, having conversations one-on-one with consumers and developing one-on-one relationships with consumers. I probably go overboard. I you know, I see them, I call them my friends. They're like Donata friends and fans. Because I really do enjoy having those conversations. And I think that's going to be hard as we scale and as we bring more people into the business. How do you keep that, those personal relationships? And we've got a lot of personal relationships with our fans, so much so that, you know, if we make a mistake or something goes wrong, you know, we get the occasional, ice cream's hard, man. Like, I would have, it's a really, really tough business because you've got to keep it frozen. Not only does it, you know, cost so much to keep it frozen all the way from our manufacturer to the Coles freezer, like so many things could go wrong along the way. So, you know, often you'll get a product that's unfrozen and refrozen along the way, and a lot of complaints come in. But keeping those relationships and being really authentic and having a conversation with the owner of the business really goes a long way with customers to kind of forgive you for those little things that go wrong along the way. And they might be out of our fault, but it comes down to the whose brand is on the packaging that they bought that was faulty. So how we do that at scale, I don't know yet. There is a bunch of tech and stuff that we can't afford yet that will enable us to do that a little bit more. But having me personally, having the one-on-one relationships is, you know, has been really important early on in our business, for sure.
Especially you doing it yourself, you know what I mean? Because you're doing it, you're creating it, you know, so it's very important. And
Yeah. And it's something that we really, again, I think it's those people that we put in time to building those relationships, they talk to their friends and those people talk to the next people. And so a lot of, our strategy is about groundswell and making sure that people say nice things about us to their friends, and not only about the product, but who we are as a brand and the interactions that we have with them. So we give a lot of, like, we've got merch for sale. You can buy Donata jumpers on our website. But half the jumpers we give away because we, you know, it's through a good conversation I've had with someone, or something's gone wrong with the product, or just a fan that I can see posting about us all the time. We'll send them, you know, we'll send them merch or jumpers, or for people that are really special that we see that go over the top. And like, you know, there's a few people that we know that are huge Donata fans. We developed the Donata golden spoons. We've got little engraved golden spoons for those very special fans.
Oh, it's like Willy Wonka, the golden ticket.
Yeah.
How good's that?
Yeah. We were trying to find some kind of like reward, like show us 20 lids and get it. But I think it just comes down to like, that all felt a bit kind of convoluted when we were trying to think of a campaign to kind of like, how do they get the golden spoon? And at the end of the day, it's like, show us some love and, you know, or show us like the ultimate kind of like brand fan love, and like, well, you know, you earn a golden spoon. So it kind of, it's a little bit intangible.
I love that. That's sick. Ice cream man who loves you enough that's going to give you a nice golden spoon. Everyone loves their ice cream truck.
Yeah.
I do have one. I got one more question. What goes into making a new flavor of ice cream?
For us, it's like we whittle down what ice cream, you know, what flavors are available, what inclusions are available, what we can develop that's commercially viable. And we try to make it and see what tastes good. And then the best tasting stuff gets to the shelf. We've got two new flavors launching in October. I'm not sure if I meant to say that yet, but they are really exciting. So one will be a berry flavor, which is one of our most requested flavors. Our most requested flavor is strawberry, but strawberry was just so hard to develop. It just kept tasting like, I don't know if you know the Bulla frozen yogurt.
Yes. Yeah.
The Bulla, like, and I think that was something that was kind of huge in the 90s, is Bulla strawberry frozen yogurt. It just kept tasting like that. And that's not the experience you want from a strawberry ice cream. So we were just like, that doesn't make the, we've got a, you know, pretty high bar set for what we think a Donata sugar free ice cream should taste like, and that just didn't cut it. Not that that's not good, it's just not what people want when they think strawberry ice cream. They want something a little bit like almost artificial tasting. So we've got a different type of berry ice cream launching. We've got something else that's super indulgent, but still lower calorie and sugar free. So that's very exciting. And there's some other products we're developing. We're looking at new, not only, we're looking outside ice cream as well, like I said before, into other different, you know, sweet snacks and treats. So
the research and development would be unreal in your gig, I reckon. You'd just be trying and tasting everything.
Yeah, yeah. Shaz has we have a great time with Shaz bringing us, you know, different samples. She's got samples of something that we're going to try this weekend that are absolutely delicious. So we're really excited about what's ahead for all those different things, for sure.
I love that. I'm Joe Chalice. That's the best gig ever.
Yeah, it is.
Your dream
job. How do we land this?
That's insane. Yeah. Oh, honestly, because I love all types of flavors, man. I could go on forever. You know?
Of course you do.
Anyway, what's your favorite? Have you guys tried
chocolate? Yeah, chocolate. Yeah. I ate it in bed like a pig, and I forget what I was watching. I think it might have been It's Always Sunny in Philly or something like that.
Yeah.
And I looked at the thing and it said, because normally I'm a bit of a grub, I'll leave the tub right next to the bed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's no good for dogs. No good for dogs. No. Yeah, so it actually holds me accountable and makes me put it away before I go to sleep. So
yes. Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, but that's one thing we've, you know, that costs us 5 cents more to put that messaging on the inside of the tub. But I just couldn't live with myself if, you know, a dog, if we killed a dog or something like that. So
that'd be terrible.
That's 5 cents well spent, is having that that message inside the lid.
Oh, 100%. You don't want to look the guilt, all that sort of shit.
So you can't give the dog the last lick of the ice cream?
No. I don't know who's giving their dog. Like, I had one lady once, this was before we had the, and she'd done a story of like giving her dog ice cream, and I was like, no. And I couldn't contact her. So then I looked her up on, I looked her up on Facebook, and she had a business. So then I called her through the business saying like, the dog was fine. But I was like, you can't be giving it, you've got to take it to the vet. I mean, it was all fine. I was overdoing it, but.
I should care that much.
Yeah.
I
stalked her down, found her phone number through a business Facebook account to save the dog. And then I was like, never again, that, you know, we're paying for the message in the lid.
Oh, yeah, 5 cents worthwhile, 100%.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We've loved having a chat.
Pleasure. That was a great chat. I forgot we're being recorded too. I hope that was okay.
Interesting talking about being a startup in WA scene and like trying to get it. They're on the other side. It feels like they're on the other side of the world.
Yeah, they would feel a little bit isolated. We don't realize how lucky we are with the support systems we have around us in our sort of region where we live. Region. What are we, Vikings?
Vikings.
Region.
But they're just backing themselves. They're having a crack and they're making some cool things happen. I'm excited to watch their growth journey. And like Soph said, hopefully we get them back on the podcast and have the other girls come on and tell us what's happened over the next 12 months. Because I'm expecting I'm going to see massive things on the horizon for them. If you liked this episode, please tell us what you're learning. Tell us what you liked about it. Tell us what you'd like to learn. And any guests you might think of you want to get on, just give us a go. Otherwise, see you next episode.